All right, good morning. I'm Chairman Brad Holton. I'll bring the meeting to order. We have a 10:30 agenda item for DSD business, and we also have an action item, which let's consider that first. Consider FCOs and modified developer agreement for Allison Meadows subdivision, case RZ2021-0047-MOD. So with that, take it away.
So, Mr. Chair, I just realized, looking at the agenda, it looks like we didn't have Allison Meadows FCOs on this list, so I don't know if that needs to be renoticed, because I have the modification for the development agreement, I have the development agreement, and then I have...
It says FCOs and modification.
Well, it says for the modification, for case number RZ, but it doesn't say the SD number. Well, is it okay? Because we're also signing the FCOs for Allison Meadows.
Yeah.
It's covered? Okay, we're good. Okay, sorry. I just want to make sure. So, yes, this is a case that you've heard. It was the one that you had been approved for a rezone back in 23. But it had a condition on it that said that all Caldwell City requirements were waived except for connecting to water, or connecting to water was the only one that was waived. So it was put on hold. They came back and asked for a development agreement modification that went through hearing along with the continued hearing of Allison Meadows subdivision. You had approved all of those, and today we have the FCOs for the development agreement modification. We have the development agreement that has been signed by the property owner with that modification.
Okay.
And we have the FCOs for Allison Meadows subdivision.
Okay. Discussion?
I'm in favor, Mr. Chairman.
And Chairman, I would say that the review process that we're going through with the cities, the partnerships that are being built are valuable. I think the county in the near future needs to partner closer. I also talked with Michelle just in between the hearing yesterday that we need to start identifying areas that are in proximity to city limits where it would be inappropriate to waive given the either the annexation or the city development that happened. So I am going to be in favor of these, but I'm also in favor of continued conversations so that it looks like we're putting a coordinated effort into county development together. So
if I may, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Van Beek, on this one in particular, we did have a large showing of neighbors who didn't want it to have city look. They didn't want the curb gutter sidewalk, the street lights, those kind of things. And that's why it led you to that
conclusion. Yes. Go ahead. I understand. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if you drive by that area, curbside gutter and all that city stuff would be wholly inappropriate for this. Like it would be an island of unto itself.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Chairman, as people say many times that our job is difficult, it is. I can think of another subdivision that exists that has a rural landscape with the city requirements waived, but there's now an application that's coming that would be large and in charge of how the area is developing. So difficult to plan for, but I just think we need to be thoughtful. Anytime we're considering road variances to narrow any of that, that's a conversation I look forward to having. Thank you, Development Services, for what you're doing to get us caught up and the work that is happening on the planning side.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we sign the FCO's modified development agreement for Allison Meadows subdivision case number RZ2021-0047-MOD.
I second.
All right. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Very good.
Do they need to make a motion for the SD?
Yes. It is SD2021-0039.
So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we sign the
FCOs.
The FCOs. Okay, I'm sitting here looking at it. I should know, huh? Sign the FCOs for SD2021-0039 as presented.
I second.
All right. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. That should legally cover all of that. Okay. Is there general business that we'd like to discuss? We would. I would like to, too, so I'll hand it to you.
So I emailed Jen in three items, and in general, I think we can go through them in order. At 11 o'clock, some of our friends from the assessor's office are coming in.
Oh.
I created a flow chart of how lots in a subdivision then get parcel numbers.
Okay.
And they would get addresses and then be available for permitting. So I would like to wait on that one until they're here.
Perfect.
I believe Mr. Stender is coming with them.
Oh, good.
First item I wanted to discuss was recently with the health district, we had a kind of a free-flowing discussion with them. They would really like the county to require that applicants come through the door with a pre-development record of a pre-development meeting with the health district instead of just a signature. And that would provide a more thorough review when it comes through the door. There's a cost to that, but that does apply to future health district permits, whatever they would pay for that pre-development meeting within 1 year of paying that fee. And other agencies may want that, but I would more say preferred on our other agencies rather than just an acknowledgement signature. The reason I say that is when a planner, when that gets lands on their desk, they've just got a signature with no comments, and then we do our courtesy agency notice, and that's when we get substantive comments. If we were to get a more complete application, the planning staff could really start writing that report. But at least having the health district, the health district is a knockout agency. If for some reason the applicant can't provide septic, we have to recommend denial, right?
Right.
To me, I would rather, if I'm developing the property, I'd rather know, and this came up on a case we recently discussed, it's probably going to be a $20,000 project to get the septic for that, and that might have saved that applicant paying the $1,600 they need for our process. So is penny wise, pound foolish, in my opinion. So the reason I'm talking to the board about this, my understanding is this board or a previous board says we don't want to require an applicant get those other agencies more serious pre-apps because there's a cost there. And I believe the health district is 150. There's a highway district that's 250. But
it wasn't us.
I don't think so.
I don't think it was us. That doesn't even sound familiar. It was us?
Opposed to that position. To me, come to me with an application that shows that these other agencies who could sync this have already reviewed it and weighed in at least to the point that it's still a viable application. I think it's unfair for the public to start the process and find that XYZ agency, whether it's Southwest or it's a highway issue or whatever it is, sinks the whole thing and perhaps makes it unviable. I think that's just frustrating to me.
Yeah.
Much like the band, I think we're in sync.
Okay.
So the history. So back in 2022, we were getting letters from agencies saying, we need more time to review these. And so we started our courtesy notice. We give them 30 days instead of the 15 days after we give them a notice for hearing. Gives them more time to help us build our staff report. So we started that. It was working well, but we're getting so many of those. They're like, they don't know that, half of them don't know that they need another process after you guys. And so we came up with this agency acknowledgement letter. And so we came up with it. We showed it to the board, and it was like, all they're going to do is meet with them. They get to tell them, hey, you're going to need all this other stuff. They get to understand that. And they also know, the agency knows that, hey, a hearing case is going to be coming, so I'll get ready for our comments. During that time when we developed that, there was a lot of discussion about, well, can we force them to make them pay our fees at that time? You know, and the idea was just to have a conversation. If they wanted to prompt that, that was fine. But at the time, the board was just like, oh, I don't want to force anybody to pay for anything. they can submit their application. It can, and then at that time, the agency says, you can say, we never had a pre-development meeting. And then that's when we go, do you want to do this? If not, it might not make it so we can make this finding. And if they want to proceed, you get that letter. And so there was guidance at the time to not force anybody into paying for any extra stuff. But we are hearing recently from a couple fire districts, all the highway districts, and now Southwestern Health, they'd rather us force that. Prior to submitting an application, they get a pre-development meeting done and pay those fees and then submit that. And so the reason why we're bringing that history up is, do we want to start forcing that, or do we still want them to meet? They acknowledge they met, and then the comments they received during the courtesy time is going to let us know they never did a pre-development meeting, they really should, or we're fine with it, move forward with it, or whatnot. So
another thing I'd like to tag on to what Dan's saying, so we're trying to get caught up with our applications. I think that's well known. When we do it that way that Dan just said, it sits in our hands longer. The applicant's doing the work beforehand if we force the issue, so to speak. And so we get it, as I said earlier, it's more complete and we can start writing. So that would be the point I'd make overall.
Chairman, can I comment on that? So in favor of what you're saying, a lot of those notices or that feedback from agencies, whether it's IDEW or self, I don't see a lot of value or content in there because they haven't had the opportunity to do exactly what you're saying. So it might be in there two or three times, and it's, for all intents and purposes, it's not meaningful information. It's just filler space in there. So if the applicant knew ahead of time what was required, which would expedite time, and we've tried so hard to be gracious at every angle in what we're doing, I think we need to get to the point where do we develop standards that are respectable and that help the valley grow in a way that's good, that because as we get more and more people, let's pick on fire, for instance, Commissioner Brooks' favorite topic, but some people in the rural county will say, what do you mean I'm not in a fire district? What do you mean I don't have fire suppression? So that's one example. I would be in favor of a more complete application coming to development services. I think it would help that process, cut down paperwork, do the yes and the no's faster. That's what I'm hearing.
So how does this work on the applicant side? Is this a part of the complaint that I've heard from some applicants? Why do I have to go out and talk to all these agencies now when I know after I submit this application, I'm going to have to talk to them again anyways? Like, I'm having to talk to these people twice.
Right. And so that is part of the complaint. So we added that because there was a communication between these agencies, and they don't like that. Like, people want to apply and then see what happens. And Josh is correct. So what typically happens, we'll do our 30-day courtesy notice. We'll get a letter going, they never did the development meeting. We don't recommend they go forward until they do that. We give it back to them going, what do you want to do? We either move forward, we can't make this finding, or you go do that. And then we don't hear back for months, and it sits, and then you get to see our list of why there's backlog, because we have these people who should have probably submitted an application that already maybe looked into that a little further or addressed that. But the good thing is right now our agency, talking to other agencies, it does work. They do come to these agencies and talk to them, and they sign off that they, but these agencies now understand that takes a lot of their time, and they want to be paid for that. And a lot of them find there is issues that they need more time to vet out, and just vet it out now instead of here. I believe it still works, but it does cause more time, and you're going to start seeing that time for why a case is sitting so long before it's getting to you. Obviously, if we can get them to meet those agencies, get some letter ahead of time as they're submitting for that application, they're addressing it, would make things a lot smoother. But again, it goes back to, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to have to do that. I just want to be able to submit. And if you want to deny it because I didn't add that, then that's their voice. That's their application. We don't have code right now saying you have to have those things in there. You know, so this is something we have added to the application process to get more information. And right now, my understanding that what we have does work, except for a few agencies that have development, pre-development meeting requirements. So there's two fire districts, three of the four highway districts have it, one irrigation district has it, and Southwest District Health. The rest of them, I don't think, have it. And so that's the thing, is like, if we force that too, and these agencies don't have it, what does that mean? Did they get to say, as I think Zach, or as Josh said, did we say preferred instead of you must have this, you know? And so I just want to make sure we're consistent on that if we're going to change that. If not, when we created that form, we talked to all the agencies, and that was something to get them talking. And then that gave them an alert to give us comments. And so, as you saw, as I think Commissioner Van Beek said, some of these comments mean nothing because they didn't do a pre-application meeting. And trust me, staff goes, you should do this meeting before we schedule it. And if they say no, that's on them. That's their proof at that point. And we usually put that in the staff report. We have no information.
So I'm wearing the county hat. We're getting all the bad press because we're the ones holding an incomplete application because they have to go get the blessings from these other agencies. I'm sorry. I guess I must have a simple mind. This is elementary, dear Watson. That is not an application. It is an incomplete application until those agencies get a response. And it's the burden of proof is upon the applicant. But you're telling me in this situation, we're in a bad situation where the burden of proof is on the county that we need, since we've taken this application in, it's given a number, quote unquote, it is an application that is legally set to that time, and it's an incomplete application. Let's get this fixed. Because I'm sick and tired of the county being the bad person because the applicant hasn't done their due diligence to submit an application that has dealt with the issues to that piece of property. Dude, am I seeing it wrong?
I don't think so.
I mean, I get it that it's going to cost them some more money and it's going to be this. I get it. But they also aren't going to share with us any of their profits.
Yep.
Or are we going to get to have to share with them any of their lack of return on investment?
Chairman, can I continue on your thread that is important to me? We've had two in the last couple of months where the applicant wanted to move ahead with an incomplete application. So I'm looking at our file, and we're up here. I don't want to see those. I want to empower development services to say you don't get an option to go forward with an incomplete before the board. It's unfair. And then I'm, as a commissioner, looking for something that doesn't exist and having, I don't want to be put in that position. It's either complete and we can look at the information and make an informed decision, or it's incomplete and you've failed to provide what it is that the board needs to render a decision. Reject.
Chairman Holden.
Yes.
If I could put a period on the end of this sentence, where I think Canyon County's in a unique position. I've worked at a city, and the pre-apps would have 12 people in there. Public Works, the street department, parks, all these people, where they can do these knockout questions like, you know, you've got a half mile to run your sewer, and it's millions of dollars, or you'd have to punch the rock or something. So we don't have that luxury. So to me, this is the way we get as close to that as we can, because we're trying to build a funnel, and at the bottom of the funnel is the board process or the planning commission process, and we want the best quality product for you. So if I'm hearing you guys right, you're saying go ahead and require this to the extent we can.
And if we need to set an ordinance in our land use planning, then we have legal crafted in a way that it's fair and it treats everybody the same.
Okay.
But I am so in agreement with Commissioner Van Beek that it is absolutely procedurally unfair for others that are in the process doing all of the crossing the T's and dotting the I's for some applicant to push that application before this board when it's incomplete. That angers me, actually. And I would like to have it as staff policy that that is divulged directly to this board during that hearing. Because they can do whatever they want to do. It's their dime, but I'm not wanting to hear an incomplete application.
The chair is such note what their current process is, and you'll see this in your staff reports. So what they submit, we try to help them. That's why we have parcel inquiries and pre-app meetings, so we can give them all the options and understanding. But once they submit, they just have to hit whatever's in that checklist, and we can improve that checklist, obviously. But once you submit, that's their voice. And what we typically do after we get all the comments, we go, all right, we can't meet this, this, and this for this reason. You're missing this information. We need all this stuff. Here's your options. How much time do you need to do that? Give us a reasonable time frame. And then what we're going to do is put it on the back burner while we work on these other ones. And we'll come back to it when you have that information. If you don't want to add that, tell us. We're going to move forward as denial. And we just want that showing that you didn't want to add that at that time. So the board can see that you didn't want to, you wanted to continue this with incomplete information. If I don't hear back from you within this time, we're just moving forward. And so we don't mess around. Like, they had the chance to meet with us at the front and really talk to us and meet with staff. But once they submit, that's their voice, and we tell them, you're missing all this stuff, and we give them only a certain amount of time, and then we're done. We bring it to hearing and see what the hearing body wants.
Chairman, with that, Dad.
Just a second. I'm still uncomfortable with that. Because they are in a process and they're pushing others out of the way that is legally following the process, and they're choosing to come before us or P&Z and take our public hearing time on an incomplete application. I am really against that. I'm only one voice, but I'm really against that. If you don't want to supply the information needed for a public hearing, you don't get to come before a public hearing. It's your choice. Legal is going to have to weigh in on it, but
why don't we set a meeting and we'll come up and do a flow chart of what we can change and what exists that we can use already? Because there were some changes to the application ordinance that we did a few years ago that I think some of this would already be built in.
Yeah.
If we look at it, or maybe just a couple of minor tweaks. So let's set a meeting for next week, and we'll come up with the path forward to recommend.
Yeah. Chairman, can I add to that? And I appreciate your comments. Staff provides a list of exhibits in the report, which is very helpful. It's an easy tab to find. If there was a section missing, here's what we're missing. Then you open the meeting. Oh, I see that you're missing these documents. This is a like you deny out of the gate.
Don't hear it at all.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
I've done it. I've done it in this room. I have asked the applicant before I open the public hearing, this is missing. Do you sure you don't want to go back and get this before we open it up? I didn't tell him what I was going to possibly deliberate and decide, but I think they got the idea. I don't even want it to come to that point. I don't even want it advertised. I don't want it on my agenda. If it's incomplete, either get off your training wheels and bring me in a fully operated bike or forget it.
And Chairman, I don't disagree with you. I would also submit that one or two of those people do talk about the process. We've been the subject of some unflattering discussion, but one or two, and you're going to get, it'll be a 1 for 100 hit.
Ultimately, it is in the applicant's best interest.
I agreed.
To give us a complete
application. I totally agree. But Chairman, we're fighting some history where there was one presentation at Planning and Zoning, and they heard what the recommendations were or weren't, and they tweaked it in between the time it came to the board, which is a different, potentially a whole different decision based on late information. And so we're trying to overcome that. Yeah. And a quid pro quo mentality, sorry.
Yeah, through the chair, what we were trying to fight, what we continue trying to fight is the ones that come in with nothing, just meet enough to get it in, and then they don't want to provide anything till there's a hearing set. And then all of a sudden, during that deadline, they're adding all the stuff. And that's what we're trying to alleviate.
That's what I am adamantly opposed to.
Okay.
It doesn't even get to the point of consideration of a date and time for a hearing.
So I think Zach's suggestion, let us get together and work on what we can and can't do and bring it back to you and bring that forward. And
perfect. Because this also helps our statistical issue with some of these very disgruntled people who are more than willing to chew my ear off about wah, 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 about the length of time of these applications. And this directly affects that.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Got it.
Thank you.
Chairman, I just...
Professor, we're ready.
So you guys need a recess for
me? Chairman, I just want to
ask for glass or what?
Chairman, I want to make a follow-up comment that the conversation that we just had wasn't personal to any organization or entity or person. It simply is in the interest of trying to develop the county with standards that make sense, and sometimes change is hard.
Very important point, Commissioner Van Beek. I was, during that discussion, I was thinking of no specific applicant or business that is going to be coming before us that I'm aware of. I made reference to a couple that have been done in the past, but there was no need to bring out their names. It was talking about policy,
mm-hmm.
not individual.
Correct.
Okay, good point. Thanks. All right.
Mr. Chairman, the board had asked, I think it's almost coming up on 6 weeks ago, for us to provide a flowchart of the subdivision process after you sign the plat.
Right.
What happens, essentially, that would get somebody into having a parcel number and an address and such. I think that was based on public feedback. So my personal philosophy is one county, one team, and DSD and the assessor's office, we work together all the time. And specifically with Jacob here, and the assessor, Brian Stender, and the deputy assessor. And so in the spirit of teamwork, I did a draft flowchart right here, and I had these guys work on it with me. And so in the spirit of that, they wanted to be here today, and that would allow you to ask any questions you've got. Does everybody have a copy of this?
I do
not.
That
was my question.
No.
There you go.
Thank you.
Greg, would you like a copy?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You guys want me to start and then you come in at step two there?
This is your meeting. We're here for
moral support.
It was on the calendar.
Sure.
Okay.
So immediately after you sign the plat, the applicant is responsible for recording the plat, just right out the gate. I usually, folks that are under a time constraint will do that very quickly, but I don't have the data on the average time between when you sign it and somebody records the plat.
Right.
The assessor's office would then create parcel numbers, and they do that for, keep in mind, they're doing that for the cities too. So that's a pretty high workload. Whereas DSD here, we're just doing all the development outside the cities. We aren't. So these guys have a bigger obligation, I would say, in general on creating those parcels.
Right.
Once we have those parcel numbers, our GIS division would go ahead and create addresses.
Okay.
That allows, oh, cool, I hadn't seen this. After that, emergency services wants to take a look to make sure there's no duplicates or the address numbers make sense so that their staff can find the property. So there's quite a bit of variability in when we get those addresses done so that we can take that into our permitting system.
How soon does emergency medical service, so I'm assuming from this that they're the last that confirms for sure this is going to be for any date future is going to be the address.
Yes, Chairman Holden, Commissioners. I believe that's the case anytime like we change an address or anything like that, it goes to EMS. We create something called a certificate of address that goes to EMS.
Okay. we ran into a developer who had a, I don't remember, did he have three or four lots that were going to be on the, this year's Parade of Homes? Anyway, he was trying to rush this through as fast as he could because he was a little bit behind his schedule for completing the homes, and I was curious how that might have got put through. Seemed like a big ask.
Yeah, Chairman Holton, commissioners, there was pressure put on us to push it through, and our policy is, we first of all, continuity, consistency. So we just process the plats as they come in.
Okay.
We do not deviate from that. Fairness, right? So sure. All the cities, all the counties, we just do them in order. And that time frame, 2 to 6 weeks, the longer end of that is to capture when we freeze our data at the end of the tax year.
Right.
That's May, June. So we have approximately a month where we can't process anything.
Right.
So that time frame helps us capture that delay. But typically on any given, you know, time other than that, 2 to 3 weeks is what we tell people, and we've held to that for years, and we've consistently met that time frame.
Okay. Cool. All right.
Chairman Holton, I'll kind of piggyback off what Josh stated. I handed out that spider graph that you've all seen before with all the new lots.
Right.
It's not just the county that we're processing stuff for. We're definitely doing things for the cities as well, the new subdivision lots. In 2024, just a refresher, we did roughly 2,700 just new parcels, or new subdivision parcels. So, and this year we're already at 3,100 new parcels, and we have 2 months to go.
Yes.
So, it's not like we're sitting idle, just doing nothing. Our team is, we run very thin, and they're very efficient at their work.
Ooh.
So 2017 is when I became assessor. We've never really had a formal complaint of any sort that I'm aware of, that it's taking too long. So not sure where you all wanted to go today. So
no,
lots of the title company is aware of our process, our dead zone, when we're trying to get assessment notices out, and through the appeal. First appeal period. The MLS is aware, city's aware, city still issues building permits. I'm not saying that there's room for improvement or we can tighten that down, but I think we're at a point in time where if we want to shorten times, we would need additional staff to shorten that time. If we want to go that route, I'm happy to have open the budget, put in another $70,000, we'll get another employee.
Gee, thanks for your offer. I appreciate
that. Just so you know,
that
request is coming in the budget season. From now. But we would definitely, if we want to front load that, we would be more than welcome to do that now.
If I can tag on to what the assessor just said, I work with Jacob quite a bit as I've had questions about lot splits and things like that, like what happens with those in the assessor's office and how we could maybe track those. And when you go into the plat room, it's like an old newsroom. You can hear everybody typing, people walking around. It's like, yeah, they're, you can tell it's quite busy down there.
Mm-hmm.
They probably do need that other FTE.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Just show me the revenue.
Hey, we're working on it.
Okay. So I appreciate that, and I get this process. I'm going to ask a wild card, but it isn't. It happens all the time. A not legalized land division, a person comes in for a building permit, and he's just so happy that his neighbor sold him 5 acres. And so he's roller skated in here to get his building permit, and he might need an address. How do we, what's policy and how do we handle a legally unrecognized land division when they're taking it to the next step and they want their building permit number and they want their tax identification number and.
Chairman Holton in our office, if you can tell me if I'm wrong, but whatever's recorded, we reflect. We're not the deed police, essentially, for lack of a better term for it. Something's recorded, we're gonna reflect that new legal description if it splits it into one lot, two lot, four lots, whatever. We're gonna reflect the current legal description and the ownership. We track the ownership and the boundaries. Issuing a building permit, whether it's legal or not, that's 100% up in DSD's department.
Chairman, can I ask a question? I've had a conversation previously with the assessor, and so this might be 6 years ago, but it has to do with software and interfacing between development services and the assessor's office. Was there at one point software that would have done that, and with the upgrade for Amentum that's required, is that still a possibility?
Chairman Holton, Commissioner Rowdy, years ago there was a third-party vendor that had a license agreement with Amentum Technology, our assessment administration software, and with that business agreement, they shared information between the two modules, but I'm not aware of anybody that's currently using that module anymore.
Okay, and that's unfortunate because really to answer Chairman Holton's question, if there was submission, you could interface the recording of a deed with the issuance of a parcel number or to make sure that they worked back and forth instead of there being a code enforcement issue where it's an unrecognized split coming to the board, us having to try and retrofit something in there. I don't know what the answer is, but thank you for at least confirming that's not an available product.
Yeah, Chairman Holton, Commissioner Revy, there's a lot of synergies when we purchase software packages that communicate efficiently with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I was aware of that software package for about 2 years, and then it's since they're no longer coming to the same places that I did.
Right. So can I ask a question? I'm going to look at the chief who wears many hats, but to build an interface program like that probably wouldn't be cost efficient?
Mr. Christopher, no.
Okay.
Chairman, commissioners, we do have logins with kind of reduced access to Amentum, though, for quite a few staff in DSD. So we can look at some of the deeds that have been recorded, things of that nature.
Okay.
And we do need that for addressing and things of that nature quite a bit. And when the planners were doing those PIs in the past, they would go back through and see how the deeds came to be or when they came to be. I'll also say that when somebody comes up to our counter, there's kind of layers of review. The development technicians will look, and sometimes they can see quite quickly if it's a legal or illegal lot split. If it was legally done, there's something in our system. That's pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not sure, they will go to our planning staff. What happens is, if that's an illegal lot split, we will check as quickly as we can, or we'll tell the customer, file an entitlement verification. If there's a split available, they can legitimize it.
Mm-hmm.
If they can't, the process is probably a comp plan amendment and a rezone. And we will quite quickly say this is likely or unlikely to get approved. It goes back to the knockout questions, right? And sometimes
right.
It's just unfortunate, hey, I don't know who told you this was legal, but it happened. It's not.
Yeah. And Chairman, it would just be nice, given the level of professionalism and the tenure that we have in both of these departments. I can think of one case in Southeast Nampa that sat for years trying to get approval on a parcel that was too small, was sold by somebody that, you know who that is, yeah. That's not a good look on us, but it's not on us.
So as we get more and more and more lots, we're going to run into this issue more and more and more. And I guess it just astounds me that I can do a proposed land division. I can get a licensed land surveyor to write me a description of the property, and I can roller skate into Canyon County and I can record it, and I feel totally empowered that I can build a house on it. And it bothers me a little bit that after the fact of that division, how are we determining that the original parcel owner truly wants to have a buildable site transferred over to the new divided parcel? It seems to me that there has to be a whole legal process for that and a declaration from the original parcel owner to authorize that building permit to be transferred. Is that a process, or is that just a staff thing that we're asking them to do for us? How are we?
Wouldn't that just be a rezone, though, Chairman, with what Josh was saying? You'd have to go through if there's not a building permit available.
Chairman, commissioners, we're just looking at the lot they're bringing forward for the building permit.
Okay.
I think, Chairman, are you getting at that I own a piece of property, then somebody goes and records a deed over my property and takes a little bit? I don't know that we can get into that in DSD.
So this is what's bothering me, is that nobody is saying that they're the title police. Nobody's telling us that anybody's is validating the legality of this newly created lot. And what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that this hasn't been the way it's always been. I'm saying that as we keep filling out and keep filling out, this is going to start being a bigger and a bigger and a bigger problem. And I am concerned that I don't want the county in the middle of a lawsuit, because they think, because the county accepted this document that the surveyor did for me, I have a bona fide legal lot because I sure as heck just paid a couple $100,000 for it or whatever. I see some potential of the public getting tripped up, and I don't want to get involved in a skirmish between entities, because as the county, we're required to have the recorder's office. We're required to now give that new quote-unquote parcel tax ID number. By gosh, I got a tax ID number. I'm legal. I just see this trail. It, to me, it looks like an airplane that's on fire and it's going to go down and crash unless we circumvent the projection of the direction that we're headed.
Chairman, yeah, I was going to ask. Jacob looks like he has a comment.
Yeah, Chairman, commissioners, thank you. That was a good summary of a lot of what we experience in the assessor's office. We have no say over what people deed to others.
Right.
Right. So once a deed is recorded, and to address the question, if someone describes a part of my land, we would not process that unless the names all matched up. So we have protocol in place to keep overlaps and gaps from happening.
Okay.
to a decent extent. Now, if someone had a 40 and they were approved for only three splits, but they had it surveyed and four legal descriptions were recorded in deeds, our maps are going to show what was recorded. It may violate their approval. And as a matter of fact, I had this issue about 2 months ago. A builder who was working to get a permit for a piece out in the county came down to our office and was like, hey, what's going on here? I thought we were good. The deeds all line up. And we were kind of confused when we hear that term illegal split. We're like, we want to see what the geometry looked like before. We'll do some research. And we'll try to help close the loop here between our department. So we've gone through this before, and we know how to kind of take the next steps, but the builder's question was, how is this valid when it's on your maps, our assessment maps? And I gave him the explanation of, like, we will really just reflect what's recorded, barring anything awry, you know, the names don't match or the legal description doesn't work. But he was asking a similar question, like, can we integrate the two data bases to make sure that everybody has all the permits in place, the entitlements? And I kind of hemmed and hawed with him about the issues with that, given our maps. And he, over about 20 minutes, he understood that it's a pretty complex, the two databases coming together to verify that once someone buys a piece of land, that they have all the entitlements in place. That's a tough target to hit. I think, you know, realtors, not to throw anybody under the bus, but realtors, they're sellers. You know, they're trying to just sell it, and they may make a disclaimer that this doesn't guarantee that there are the entitlements involved, that those are all satisfied. And I've seen disclaimers on surveys where they say this does not constitute that all, you know, this doesn't mean that all the entitlements are met. So there is a misunderstanding about what our maps tell people, and when they go in to get a permit, everybody thinks that our maps are the be-all, end-all of legality, of valid parcel creation, and it's simply not the case, as you've already summed up. So we often have this discussion, and I like to think that we do a good job about that engagement and provide an explanation about the differences between our departments and the differences in our data. And at the end of this, the builder was quite satisfied with my explanation, and I like to think that he's going to go tell his community, you know, don't expect the assessor's map to tell you all of the background or the entitlements of a parcel through a land use perspective.
Absolutely.
Go ahead. If the assessor maps are not the end all be all, why is DSD using the assessor maps in determining whether or not a particular parcel gets a building permit?
We aren't. It's a data point.
It's not the be all end all information for them. It's a piece of information.
So
I've read a lot of parcel inquiries. They're used, those maps are used very heavily.
So what we'll look at, though, with that particular parcel and going back to originality is, did we process a lot split? Because we're aware of this issue. Okay. And I think what you're maybe discussing is, we go back to what we call, I think, affectionately, the old books, which are pre-79, and then there's even another set of old assessor maps that were hand-drawn, now scanned, and we try to see continuity, and we used to look at the last thing before 79. This is also why we went to entitlement verification, where we say, give us a chain of deeds that this has been the same since 1979. So when somebody comes up to the front desk and there's a newer parcel, and we don't have record of a split, we start talking to whoever came to get the building permit or whatever. We don't have a record of this. We think it's illegal. Help us out here. And that puts us in a bind, because when somebody's coming in for a single family permit, my assumption is they're like, they've got lumber coming and all sorts of stuff. And to go, hey, do a rezone, I mean, how realistic is that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess that's my concern. We can't fix it today. But we can start, and it's not unique to Canyon County at all. It's the state of Idaho. Somebody, somehow, it would appear, needs to be the reviewer and the validator of the new parcel that's being brought in to be recorded. Somehow, some way.
You want to get this, or you want me?
Sherman Holton, that is a beast of a project.
It is a beast of a project, and the problem is it's going to become a necessity as I see, I'll just say it, as I see, if I was a nefarious person and I was listening to this, guess what the next thing I'm going to do, because I'm going to figure a way to do it in multiplicity, and just before I get caught, I'm roller skating out of the United States because I have my cash in hand, all right? And it's all paper deal. It's a paper deal getting sucked people in, and they won't even know it till they try to pull a permit on, building permit on it. And it's. I hate public record at times because nefarious people can listen to it and figure the angle out. So it's out in the open. Most people are totally unaware of it. But it is a flaw in our system, statewide system, not Canyon County per se, that sooner or later is going to have to get looked at. I mean, it's the same thing with the mortgage theft, I shouldn't say that, title theft of property, of houses. It's the same dang thing. I can even send it in from out of state that I'm now the new owner of that residential property, and it gets recorded. And then we start on a whole new roller skate when it could have been done by a nefarious person. This is talking about land, not the house. And it has the same Achilles heel.
Yeah. Chairman, and I don't don't know if we're talking about the same thing, but when it was really bust, so I've looked at the numbers on here. So in 2020, there were 3,300, 2021, 3,600. But I had realtors approaching me asking if there could be state legislation that was crafted to keep some of that, what you're, and I said, that's not my lane. I understand the problem, but I don't know how we solve it, except hopefully legislators listen and go, wow, this would really help our communities to have standards for real estate licensure.
I bet the Idaho Freedom Foundation will pick this up and solve it.
Okay. You know, awesome.
No, maybe not.
I'll take that.
I'm sorry. We have a hard...
And yeah, the assessor.
We'll let the last comment by Brian, and then we have a hard set to get out and canvass the boats.
Real quick, so I believe rough numbers, we have about 30,000 rural parcels. So you're talking all those parcels would have to be one by one by the Development Services Office, tracked back to 1979 to see what happened. So just think quantities of numbers, and I'm sure they're crushed with this deal already. So that's a
sorry. Well, yeah, that's one way to look at it, but it's not the only way to look at it. But I concur. Thank you for saying those numbers, because it's a financial nightmare. Yeah. All right. I would make a motion that we need to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. And for the record, the board will be as a quorum, and we will be physically going over to the elections office to canvass the votes. So thank you. We are adjourned.